Yeah, I'm back.
Is this good enough quality?
Oh, probably. It's good enough. It's good enough for the kind of work we do, Ben.
Can I hear you? No.
I'm not. I wasn't talking. Right. Now I'm talking again.
Now I can hear you. Cool.
You can hear my my cold voice.
Yeah.
My sick voice.
And mine.
Your eyes look very sharp tonight, Ben.
I do. Look at my red eye there. That's really good.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Yeah, it's really good.
This is bruising from the, whatchamacallit?
The laser. Oh, no, the flap.
No, it's the suction of the flap making thing.
Oh.
Yeah, weirdly.
Gosh, it's a funny sort of a thing, isn't it?
That's the worst part of it. It feels like like someone's jabbing their thumb in your eye.
Yeah. I would, I'd love to get laser surgery, but I have keratoconus in one of my eyes, and that's almost always, what's it called, bilateral? No, symmetrical anyway. It's almost always in both eyes, but it's at least subclinical in my left eye.
Right.
No, what do I mean? They couldn't diagnose it in my left eye. They couldn't see that it was there. But that just means that it's not bad enough yet. You know, worst case scenario, it is going to happen. But on the right eye, I definitely have keratoconus, and that involves thinning of the sclera or whatever the front bit is. I can't remember what all the parts are. And so that probably means that they wouldn't be willing to do laser. But what some people get is a transplant, and then I think they get laser.
Okay, crazy. The thing that freaked me out most was because, you know, one, my I'm being an idiot, and like my left eye isn't quite as good as my right, and I'm thinking, yeah, looking into the details where they can redo it afterwards. And the thing, I stumbled across these videos of people like 8 years later getting it tuned up through the same flap.
Right.
And so they just dig around in the eye and open the flap again. It's like, shit.
Wow.
That's like,
so it doesn't re-adhere.
It doesn't seem to. I didn't know about that before the thing, but it's like, oh. And it adheres. They have to really get in there and tease it out. But yeah. The amazing thing is when the flap cut with the laser now is actually chamfered, at the edges, so that it tucks itself underneath when it goes back in.
Wow.
Crazy.
God, it's so... Eye surgery, man, is creepy. it really is creepy, eh?
It's good fun.
I hopefully will never need to have a transplant, but like I can't actually read out of my right eye. It's that bad.
Okay, even with glasses on.
Yeah, even with glasses on.
Shit, it's fun.
Yeah. And the that is worst for because I think naturally I'm right eye dominant. I'm right handed and right eye dominant. And the only time it really comes up is, thankfully, when I'm shooting, which is almost never. So it doesn't really matter.
Right.
I have enough vision for stereoscopic vision, you know, for depth perception.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I can't read through that eye.
Fun.
Yeah, it all sucks, man. Eyesight, being old, all that stuff.
No, but, it's crazy. It makes me wish I'd done this earlier, though. It's like, I'm going to need reading glasses in 5 years anyway.
But. Yeah. Yeah. You're going to need to get a better phone with a higher resolution screen, Ben.
Yeah. Exactly.
Than that janky old iPhone that I guess you probably use.
Yeah. This fucking NPS thing is worse than I'd even imagined.
Is it?
I sort of saw Bernard Hickey's tweet, and then I read his post, and it's just the sort of shit that John Key's throwing out there. It's hilarious.
So the NPS is a national policy statement.
Yeah. And talk about this. Yeah, yeah.
And that's part of the RMA.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Right.
I think. Is there like a more broad national policy statement?
No idea. We should probably just talk about it ignorantly.
I've been assuming that we're going to talk pretty ignorantly. I mean, look, everyone, So number one, the first hook that we're let off is that we're probably talking to about as many people as would overhear us if we were talking a bit rudely loudly at dinner.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Or maybe exactly. Not quite that many, depending on the size of the restaurant that we were in.
Like, have we started? Or are we going to start? Like, I was.
There's no need for. Like, of course we've started.
I was thinking that we could play it, you know, as if we'd just gone away for a couple of weeks. You know, it's been a short time since our last podcast.
Oh, man. When was the.
No idea.
It was 2014.
Really? That long ago?
It was November 2014.
2 years ago. Or was that the election special?
Let's see. When was 5:15? That's 5:15. So when was 5:14?
Don't know.
Yeah, it was pretty uneven release schedule, I guess, there for a while, and then
it was. My favourite thing though about this NPS article is the way that John Key referred to Auckland Housing like the King Salmon case in an RMA dispute.
Yeah,
it's just awesome.
So I hate the idea of having
commissioners.
Commissioners. Thank you, Ben. I hate the idea because it seems undemocratic to me. And like the Environment Canterbury thing, to me, I'm really cynical about it because it's still ongoing from the earthquake, right? And in whatever, 2010.
Was Ekan before the earthquake though? Even it was to do with water rights.
It's water rights for sure, and like coming up with standards for clean water supposedly was a thing that the council was failing to do. But what Ekan seemed to have done is just make it really easy for a bunch of farmers to get irrigation water. In areas where you just shouldn't be doing the kind of farming that they do there.
And I mean, I admit to being in a complete echo chamber, but I can't find like anyone I talk to who's related to Canterbury in any way just says it's rubbish. It's a dumb idea. It's someone quoted, it's despotism.
Yeah.
But I am completely opposed to it as well. But then, you know, this...
But on the other hand, right?
Yeah.
Why aren't we not building enough houses?
and coupled to that, you know, if the national government, regardless of who's in government, can come in and sort out the fucking NIMBYism over the unitary plan, then go for it. Yeah. But do it, yeah.
But with one stipulation, right? Because the unitary plan hasn't come back yet. Like, I think it's only 2 months away or something. It's July, I think, that it comes back to council. And I think they have to make a decision pretty quickly and vote on it.
And the thing is that the unitary plan...
And they either accept or decline it, right? And at that point, if the council did what they did, you know, a couple of months ago, and they vote against kind of the future, literally kind of vote against the future of Auckland, and vote in favour of pulling all the ladders up and pulling up the drawbridge, then I actually think that we have a dysfunctional council.
Yeah, they're not solving the problem.
And it's really something very drastic would have to happen. And at that point, it'd be like, you know, maybe we do need to have the adult step in. As much as I hate the idea of Auckland being run out of Wellington, if we can't do the job, someone has to do it for us.
But I mean, even I don't know even if it's part of the unitary plan or if it is, but there is, have you seen that... there's an Auckland Transport video that says this is the sort of stuff we're going to have to deal with in the next few years. Yeah. And they have a nice little animation where they take all the areas of allocated urban growth in Auckland, jigsaw them together, and then overlay them over Hamilton. And it's larger. The area allocated for new housing is larger than Hamilton.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't see what problem the central government is trying to solve. But then the way they're going to solve that problem, whatever the problem is say, build anywhere you want.
Yeah.
While at the same time restricting Auckland's ability to raise funds to pay for the infrastructure that they need to do. And the answer is what? Sell the airport.
Right. sell the port and the airport and what else? What else? Like sell all the golf courses? Like what is the other thing that we
do? And then you might be a quarter of the way to the money you need to spend on the infrastructure to serve the infinite growth.
Right. Now, I think I read, like, because people were talking about this on Twitter, like how, who's the Labour guy that was talking about removing the urban...
Was it Phil Twyford?
Twyford. So...
I should know, he's my MP, so...
Oh God. David Seymour's mine.
Oh,
Awesome, awesome, right?
That guy, amazing.
I see him sometimes. Well, I've seen him once walking to the bar at the end of the street, and I wanted to have a word with him, but I just. Like, my son was with me, and I don't want him to hear that kind of language.
Is there anyone else in New Zealand on $170,000 a year doing less than a year? He gets more than that, though, doesn't he? I think he gets, like, the leader's budget and stuff as well.
Good God. What were we saying? Oh, yeah. So it seems to be generally, like, a misunderstanding of how the rural-urban boundary even works. Like, that whole thing is about planning for the expansion of the city with an allocation, the allocation of infrastructure, because the infrastructure doesn't just fall from the sky. You need to actually build it, and that takes money. Now, someone costed that out, and I can't find it. It was on Twitter, and so who knows what site it was on. And it was something like $15 or $17 billion as currently planned. Right, of infrastructure and that area they're talking about, the Hamilton-sized area that we're going to be expanding into. We're going to be sprawling into. There is money that, as you say, National have said you can't raise this with really using any ordinary means.
And when you said talked about Labor's fuel tax, I went, what? No, surely we didn't have a fuel tax.
Yeah, in 2008.
But we did.
Yeah, in 2008.
It actually did. It was approved.
And so that was So Labor introduced that at the request. Do you remember before we had the super city, we had Auckland Regional Council?
Yeah.
So Auckland Regional Council said, excuse me, central government, can we please introduce a regional fuel tax because we need to pay for rail electrification? And Labor said, yep. And we've introduced it. And then, of course, that was like pretty much at election time.
Yeah.
National won and we're like, nah. No, we're going to take that away.
Why did they revoke it? Like, we talked about this on Twitter. It just vanishes. Like, you would not even know it was there after a couple of months.
Honestly, I just don't think it would. I actually think it wouldn't be there. No. Like, I bet that if you looked at the chaotic pricing around petrol stations all around Auckland and certainly even all around New Zealand. If you looked at, like, this is conjecture, but if you looked at the prices today without that fuel tax in place,
ranged by what?
And then, like, went into the parallel universe where National hadn't taken it away. Yeah, the range was huge. It was like a 40 cent range with 91 fuel. And, like, even just in BP alone, the range was like 35 cents or something. Now, to be fair, the top end was on Waiheke, but
you're right. They would have swallowed that 10 cent tax.
Yeah, and in like in that alternate universe, we would be able to see what the prices would be. I bet it would be exactly the same.
Yeah,
because you know the prices shoot up when the international crude price goes up, and the prices very gradually descend when the international oil price goes down, and it's jacked up. Right,
yeah,
like
absolutely.
Like the companies just they take profit where they can,
and they're not going to put the prices to a point where people won't pay for it. And,
that's right.
You know, or people will drive to Hamilton or you know drive to Huntley to get their petrol. They're not going to put the prices up that much. So you know,
and so I actually don't. I haven't owned a car for several years. Me and my wife we own two cars, so I guess in practice I sort of have a car, but they're both hers. So I haven't had to deal with petrol very very regularly, lately. So I don't really follow it very closely, but I feel like it's been much more stable than it was for a while back there a couple of years ago. And it was incredibly volatile, up and up and up and up and up and down and up and up and up and up, right? And through that, like even if people had noticed the 10 cents or 12 cents or whatever to begin with, after that, no one would remember anything about a regional fuel tax whatsoever. And so I don't know what the guy's credentials were, but someone on Twitter today, we probably should at least have the names of the people who've been talking directly to us about this, estimated that it would probably have been around about $1 billion would have been raised by that regional fuel tax that we wouldn't have noticed paying.
No, exactly. Right?
And that would be basically, in a roundabout way of thinking about it, free money that at we least, could spend on these things that we so critically need.
Exactly, $1 billion less the cost of funding that we have to pay if we, you know, because we probably borrowed that money from elsewhere in the meantime.
Right.
So it's not insignificant. But it's just one of these things where the fix seems so straightforward.
It was Richard Hills on Twitter. Right.
Yeah, the fix seems so straightforward. Put the fucking unitary plan in and don't listen to anyone who complains about it. Like, honestly, the people that are complaining about a well-designed three-story building next to their Mount Eden townhouse or Mount Eden, you know, backyard. You've driven around Mount Eden or, you know, Herne Bay recently. There's two-story, three-story monstrosities everywhere anyway.
Yeah.
So ignore them.
So now here's another thing. People talk about, John Key's mansion in Parnell and how no one's going to be building these buildings around him. I live in Parnell and on the fifth floor of a five-story apartment building.
You must be overshadowing so many backyards.
I'm overshadowing a tennis court.
Yeah.
I'm overshadowing no one. And then, the Dilworth cottages are pretty much in front of us. And they look out towards the port, the same direction that we look out. And kind of the next real structure is the York Street apartments, which I guess are like three or four story apartments as well. In Parnell, we've done it. And people still talk about it as a leafy suburb. Get over it. Get over it. Like, if you walk up my street, it does feel a little bit like a canyon. It does.
But it's
street level. But
that's
this just
living. That's
right. No. This has just become a different sort of street to be on at street level. But you go one street over, and it's just villas, right? Yeah. It's the same as it always was. And they can't see us, and we don't look at them. Right? It doesn't matter if some of these buildings get put in. But
it's also crazy that it's villas. It's crazy that it's freestanding buildings on, 500 square meters. That's Parnell. Totally insane.
That's right. And so you think it's the footprint of this building is 2,500 square meters, and there's probably 60 dwellings, right?
Yeah.
2,500. And these are really nice.
Instead of five.
Right. Exactly. So, and this is, I don't know if you've ever been over here. This is a nice place.
I'm sure I have. Unless you've moved since our last episode.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I had the studio over in the other bedroom. Now, I mean, this is three bedrooms. We've got a high stud. We've got a skylight. We've got two car parks. We've got, three bedrooms, two bathrooms. We've got, expensive views. It's not like, it's not like an apartment is not low quality living. It's high quality, pleasant living.
Yeah, and the part that does my head in is that the current NIMBYs who, generally, I'm going to be racist here towards baby boomers, but the NIMBY boomers who are voting against or pushing against this unitary plan, I just don't understand that when they get too old for their house, wouldn't they rather, demolish their house and build six dwellings and make a shit ton of money off it rather than sell a house where they're not allowed to be built on? It's bizarre. It's actually better value for them to allow the unitary plan to come in. It's better for their capital gains.
That's right, and that was one of the points that someone made that when people were talking about how this was there was actually a weird argument that came along parallel to this. The thing about the unitary plan is if apartment buildings actually get built, the property values around them go up, and it's because of exactly that because you can utilize the land in a much more valuable way.
Absolutely, subdividable properties are massively more valuable than
right.
Not. Yeah.
And then Matthew Hooton, his argument was that meant it was unfair to to people in non-upzoned areas. And so that was why you shouldn't be able to do it.
It's the contortions that they get themselves into about the reasons. And And so what? The central government comes in and says, you're not building enough houses fast enough. So rather than wait for the unitary plan, we'll put a national policy statement in that effectively, as I read it, will be allow people to build anything, anywhere they want to. So is that overriding their Ipsum voters or?
I don't know. Now, so I don't know if there is a different, neither of us is a planner, neither of us is a lawyer, neither of us is a resource management, whatever expert. We're not any of those things. We just have internet connections, right?
I know a few.
So I don't
probably get one on.
we probably could have got an expert on, but I mean, come on, guys. Listen, you got an episode of Discourse. Don't complain about the lack of guests.
The lack of knowledge about the subject matter.
It was never a really high quality show. This is the internet.
Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted you. You were saying?
I don't know if there's another kind of national policy statement other than this thing that is part of the Resource Management Act.
Mm.
And according to the Resource Management Act, a national policy statement is not just a diktat of the government. According to the Ministry for the Environment site and their information about RMA stuff, there is a process for introducing a national policy statement. And they need to scope it and they need to draft it and then they need to consult before they implement it.
Right.
So it requires submissions, I think.
Right?
So we would be able to say, actually, yeah, we do want this and we want you to... We want a national policy statement that says that, you know, whatever the unitary, the failed or whatever otherwise unitary plan said, along mass transit, rapid transit corridors, you can build, I mean, fuck it, 7 stories.
Yeah.
The unitary plan probably said 4 stories. The opponents to the unitary plan probably said that meant 20 stories. But the reality is that we don't need that.
Right? It would be the best possible outcome, wouldn't it, that the result of all this pissing about is that we get to build 7-story buildings in Epsom. That'd be perfect.
It'd be beautiful. And we could build like a wall around Epsom, like around actual Epsom, not Epsom electorate, which somehow includes a vast area of Auckland. Parnell is not Epsom.
Epsom North.
God damn it. It's crazy.
So
as far as I know, this is the only national policy statement. And so it's got this process. And so they would have to ask us for input. And I would say, yes, please.
Yeah. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I guess the cost of allowing building to go out as far as you want is it's probably going to be poverty, isn't it, more than anything else, because the kind of people that people will be forced to buy out in the boundaries of the build will be the people that the ones that can afford to live there, the ones that will be have to deal with it. And
the thing that worries me is if we start building like loads of like detached single family dwellings way out in sprawl planet, who is actually going to buy those? It's going to be the investors, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because if there's a cheap source of stock, like who's been buying all the expensive
stuff? This was a point that someone made quite succinctly. It said that this NPS thing, and to a degree, the unitary plan, none of it attacks the demand side of what's going on.
Yeah.
It's just supply side, which is supplying the people who can buy.
Yeah.
And they'll always, you know, like you say, the investors will always pay, you know, be able to pay a bit more than a first-time buyer.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because they're leveraging the stock they've already got. They're using all kinds of – they're getting, like, tax benefits.
Mm.
And, like you, they don't have the LACQs anymore, but there's still trickery that you can do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like you can take the depreciation. And just even – that doesn't even go to the fact that there's no other asset class that you can borrow – 80-90%. You can't borrow, you know, 900 grand to invest $1 million in the share market.
Yeah.
You just can't.
Yeah.
Maybe you can if you're a Donald Trump or something, but yeah. Yeah.
Like, I think you can only borrow $900,000 to invest in the share market like that if you don't need to. But we're talking about houses and we're talking about people who don't have all of the, you know, an excess of all the money up front, but just, you know, want to borrow for whatever reason because credit's cheap. I don't know.
Yeah. It must be already fixed. There must have been other stuff that happened since our last episode.
I would guess there's probably been one or two things.
I know iOS has somehow got terrible. Terrible, terrible since 2014. What's happened to it?
Where's my phone? There's my phone on camera. I mean, this is not going to be video. This is going to be an audio file. So,
Galaxy S7, is it?
Galaxy S7. It's the normal one, not the Edge, because I don't understand the Edge, to be honest. I don't like the way it looks.
Mm.
Maybe it feels good. I don't know. This is the best feeling phone I've ever held. And yes, I've held iPhones. The second best was a Nexus the glass Nexus. It was like a three or a four or something. Shitty camera on the Nexus, but it felt really nice. It just felt really solid. This is the best phone I've ever felt. And it has, by many accounts, the best camera. How the hell?
That camera is crazy good.
How the hell does... So the reason is that the Galaxies get released between iPhones. So the next iPhone will restore. I feel like the iPhone has the rightful position of kind of the best smartphone camera.
Will it though? Will it? I mean,
I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I was going to say. Meanwhile, you know, I open my latest generation iPhone, turn it on, and it looks the same as an iPhone 4. It does the same stuff as iPhone 4, and you know this deep touch bullshit I never use.
Yeah.
They've lost their way.
Yeah. I really like this phone. it's so nice.
And when I saw the stuff that Google announced at the latest I/O, it's just really good stuff. You know, why does the iPhone not have a car mode when it's in the car?
Yeah.
You have to buy a $1,400
what's a car mode? Stereo.
Well, you know, like just big buttons.
Oh, right. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nuts. Horrible. Someone made a movie?
So Dylan No Fun, which apparently is his name according to Chris Keel.
Oh, really?
Now, and just if I can just take a second for myself here. I'm the guy that makes up the nicknames, and that's why you're Hollywood Ben. And apparently for some reason, even though I'm the one that makes up the nicknames, I'm Dickhead Morgan. I can't really remember how that happened, but Dylan No Fun is
the best. Made up your own. You made up your own nickname.
Yeah, Dylan made his tickling movie.
Yes, it's who would have thought? A little Kickstarter, or was it? It was an Indiegogo, wasn't it?
I don't remember now. I just remember giving him a bunch of money and being like, I'm never going to see this again.
Exactly. The path that it took, I mean, you know, then Stephen Fry got involved and...
And the film commission.
Yep.
And he roped in some third-rate TV3 guy to do the on-screen stuff for him or whatever.
Voiceovers. No, it was a good movie. I really enjoyed it. Tonight?
Hey?
It opened tonight? Or was it last night? In New Zealand.
I have no idea. I don't know.
I think it was last night.
If you haven't seen Tickled, and you don't really know much about it, which, like, the chances of that, literally, we are talking to a pub of our friends, right? and not even our close friends, right? Because our close friends stopped listening a long time ago. They're just like, no, I'm tired of hearing it. I don't need to hear your voice anymore. This is like friends who we're like, hey, actually, it's really good to see you because...
It's been a long time.
Because it's been a long time.
They will know what Tickled is.
They will already know. It's futile to say don't read about it because you've already read about it. But if you haven't read about it, or if you can maybe take a friend of yours without giving them too many details, it's a really interesting story and it's really beautifully told. And it's a New Zealand movie. It's a New Zealand documentary. And... both of those things are slightly rare, and it's made by kind of one of us, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Even if you do know the story, you should go and see it because, I mean, I know pretty much I knew the story pretty much in and out, but, you know, there's basically a few little bits that I didn't. But but it was still lovely to see it rendered on the screen and it was such a visceral way. It was good fun. It was a nice watch.
Yeah. Competitive tickling.
It's
it doesn't really tell you anything about the story. That's like the tickling is just an excuse for the story. It's not that story, really.
And even though they're my friends, our friends, I will say they had one complaint about the movie, which is, I don't know, that's probably not spoilers. When they visited some friendly ticklers, I felt they could have done a better job of covering just how joyful those guys were. They were having a lot of fun, and they were really nice people.
That's right. And maybe we can is it public the videos of David and Dylan getting tickled now?
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe we'll put them in. We're not going to have show notes. We're not going to. Maybe I'll remember to put it up, but probably you should just go and look on Twitter for Dylan Reeve and find probably probably a link to him and some of the other crew getting tickled. And you're absolutely right. And that was misgiving that I is misgiving the right word. That was a problem I had with it as well. That the kind of the nice guy tickler is successful.
Yep.
He's eked out a living for himself, doing kind of the pleasant, fun form of tickling.
Yeah, I think he enjoys doing, yeah.
And
yeah.
And like the shithead is just burning money, doing the kind of mean-spirited thing.
Yeah.
That's miserable to watch.
Yeah, that was the point. Miserable for everyone. It's hard to watch. It's hard to, obviously people aren't enjoying it.
Yeah. But there's this other one which is, like, it's still kind of, it's sort of weird to watch it because tickling is, you know, it's a strange thing to see as an adult, right?
Yeah.
Like, you probably tickled your kids.
Yeah, yeah.
I have been tickling my son heaps more since I watched the video of Dylan. And he loves it. And I love how much he loves it. And I make sure to stop pretty quickly and I unstrap him from the big table that I lash him down to.
Classic.
Yeah, so it's not about tickling, and they go some way of the way to saying, listen, this is not the problem here is not the tickling, right? And here is a kind of a demonstration of how the problem is not tickling, because here is a dude being paid to be tickled by this dude who is kind of sexually excited by tickling people, and everyone's comfortable with it. Everyone gets money, and look, he doesn't mind being on camera with us, and we're in his house.
Yeah.
There's no one's freaking out, and the dude is laughing, and it's like, right, and so why couldn't the other guy do that?
Yeah, exactly.
It's not about the tickling. Yeah, no. So don't get caught up on the tickling, even though I've been talking about, I've just said tickle like 40 times to explain that it's not about the tickling.
Definitely not. So there's obviously another layer to it for him.
Yes, that's the thing. So the other thing that happened is I think that the New Zealand Labour Party has gone through about 15 or 16 different leaders since we last had the episode.
And none of them have broken like 8 to 10% preferred prime minister.
It's shocking, isn't it?
It's really bad. How have they languished this long before?
I don't know. I'm young. I feel like they haven't. I feel like...
Four terms for a New Zealand party, is that unprecedented? I suppose I should Google it.
I think National might have done it before.
Yeah.
I think three might have been the most that Labour's ever done. Like, they might have done three before as well, but I don't think Labour's ever done more than three. But I wouldn't count on National getting another term. I mean, I said this before the last election as well. Right, I know what it sounds like. There are a lot of people in New Zealand who are very happy with the returns on their property ownership, and they've still got a job, and they're pretty happy about the amount of tax that they pay. And, you know, hey, I've heard a hint that maybe these guys are going to drop taxes again, and so on, right? And so it's not out of the question. I mean, of course, you probably have to put your money on Key winning another election, even though... Like, the shine feels like it's come off, and it feels like they're not reading this housing thing at all. I don't think they are reading the sentiment. This is just, you know, this is just my hunch.
Their polling is off in that one.
Right.
So if you go back to 1800s, right, when there seemed to be only one party anyway, they had 5 years.
There was no National or Labour.
No, but then when the National Party was around, they had 4 years in the 60s. But since then, no one's had more than 3 years.
Three
electoral terms. Yeah.
Right. So National have done four terms before, and they might do it again. Yeah. And listen, one of the ways that they've done that is by actually moving quite far to the left. They do all their stupid asset sales, you know, half-witted asset sales stuff at the wrong time, kind of minimise their return that they can get.
Although they like people to say they're moving to the left, but when you look at, you know, this latest budget is basically reducing funding for pretty much everything.
Yeah, when you look
at education in real terms.
When you look at how quickly New Zealand's population is growing.
Yeah,
the funding for everything needs to be going up that much, or it is going down. to just to stay flat, it needs to go up that much.
Yeah, exactly. And in fact, they said they were, you know, freezing operational funding for schools, so it's absolutely going down.
Yeah.
Yeah. But why can't Labor, yeah, Labor get any traction on that? They're just, like, inept is the only word I can use to describe them. Yeah, their polling is bad, and their ideas are, I don't know, it's bereft.
They're clumsy, aren't they?
Yeah.
They bungle. It's really odd.
It is. It's very odd.
Like, because some of them are the same people as were there with Helen. I mean, she was, a very steady hand. I probably a pretty an iron fist, actually, as well.
Yeah, and very prosperous environment as well. So yeah, it's kind of easy to be. Oh, no, I was going to say it's easy to look good, but it's, yeah.
And, you know, actually, and this is not really about why Labor is a problem and why National is, you know, going to maybe win again. But there's a very interesting point that, you know, if we're looking at coming back into surpluses of billions of dollars a year, that means that if we don't do stupid things like cut the tax rate, we actually have enough money to do things. We actually can do really, like, if National could just take a leaf out of Labor's build book, because Labor, I think, are the party that builds stuff, right? Like state houses in the 80s, I think they built 10,000.
Yeah.
I think Helen's one built maybe in some thousands as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, National doesn't really build. Like, the last time National built a lot of stuff was, well, they built some prisons.
Yeah.
But they also built, like, the Clyde Dam.
But, yeah, right? Exactly.
I think Big was building. So
way back then.
So they do have some history,
yeah,
if you go far enough back, of building infrastructure stuff. But more recently, with, like building state housing and stuff, like, just do some of that. And even do it to sell. Like, do it as a property developer and maybe even make some money out of it. Just not much.
Yeah. Imagine if we hadn't had that fifth Labor government. I believe it's called, whatever Helen's government was called.
Yeah, I think it was the fifth, and I think the National one is the fifth as well.
Yeah, then we would have, it's just hard to imagine where we'd be, because when you look at the graph of public house building, for the last two or three National terms, they've eroded the public housing base.
Yeah.
And you look at how much of a problem it is now, because, and that's only with the successive Labor governments boosting the supply back up again. And it's hard to imagine where we'd be. We wouldn't have electric trains.
Yeah.
We'd still have those fucking noisy diesels plumbing around the city, or probably no train tracks. Would have been torn up and sold for property.
Yeah.
We'd have fewer state houses, so more people in cars and living rough. It's crazy to think what, you know, another couple of terms of National, where it might leave us in terms of a social construct.
Yeah.
And, you know, I suppose National would argue that, you know, we'll be in a place where the market will provide all this sort of stuff, and people will spread out around the country and all that sort of thing. But I don't believe it for a minute.
The market doesn't work.
No.
It just doesn't work. That's why we have government.
Yeah.
What's it called? The Chicago School or something? Is that what it's called? Like the free hand of the market?
Yeah.
Doesn't work. Like that's where, didn't those Chicago school guys, didn't they have some success in selling their ideas into Central American, like, dictatorships and stuff? Look how well those countries went.
Yeah, it's curious though, like, underlying that, you know, the kind of neoliberalism, you know, whether it's, again, an echo chamber or wishful thinking, there seems to be people who are coming around to the fact that it just isn't all it's cut out to be.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, in the USA, even looking at, you know, they need to build some serious infrastructure. If you've, you know, visited there, they really need to put some time and effort into it. And I think we need to do the same. And sure, we might not have the hyper growth we had in the 80s and 90s, but steady, you know, steady good growth with good public funded infrastructure. How is that a bad thing?
If we have a $3 billion surplus as of a couple of years from now per year, we can do, like we still can't do bullet trains, but we can do everything shy of that.
Yeah.
We can build as many houses as we want. We can build houses until we have too many fucking houses, right? We can take the island approach.
Yeah.
Right? And just bloody, just keep building. Just like become a factory of house building.
Right. And let, yeah, lower the rental yield to the point where it's, but no one wants to buy them.
They already shouldn't be, right?
They'll keep the prices down.
The yield now is, no, I think you calculated, you found it the other day, it's under 3%.
Yeah.
And so I've, in the past, I considered, you know, obviously I missed the boat.
Yeah.
But I considered, you know, trying out some,
are we, you know,
some investment. So I learned a little bit about it and I looked at, you know, some of the American sites and stuff, which, you know, their market doesn't quite apply to us. But I was looking at the yield, their yield calculation, and it was like, if you find a yield of 0.1, then that's one that you should buy. And I was like, what is this 0.1 thing? Because I'd always heard of percentages.
Yeah.
What that meant was, if you could get a 10% yield, and I was like, but you can't get that anywhere in New Zealand. And like, maybe if you're really lucky in some,
yeah,
you know, really odd little outskirt town of a South Island city, you know, you can get something like an 8% or a 7%. But in Auckland, 2.9%, something like that. Yeah. In Ireland, though, 1%.
That's when the bubble popped, when the yields.
That's where it got down to.
They were still building and buying houses at 1% yield. It's crazy.
But the people buying Auckland houses don't care about the yield. I mean, for some of them, and Gareth Morgan is one of them, he says that for his rental properties, his investment properties, he doesn't have tenants.
Okay.
Because it's just...
I really make more of the capital gain without having to deal with them.
That's right. And so Auckland has been... Auckland, like last month, was $1,200 a day or something.
That's madness.
It's definitely sustainable. Everyone should take that to the bank.
You were saying fast trains. Why don't we spend the $3 billion on a Hyperloop?
So it actually would be enough. Like, Hyperloop doesn't exist. Like, that's the number one, you've got to start by saying Hyperloop doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist. I'm so angry I'm not angry about it. Hyperloop's fine. Hyperloop itself, interesting idea, you know, interesting concept, running a train in a semi-vacuum and stuff.
Yeah.
But that the Hyperloop company, who had a massive demonstration, got the press out, videos of them cheering at their demonstration. And you look into the detail, their demonstration was a maglev sled.
Yeah.
And they're hooping up and going, this is amazing, because they made a maglev sled go 100 k's an hour along 200 meters of track. Meanwhile, in Asia... Yeah. This real maglev trains actually doing, you know, moving passengers around. Why are they building that stuff from scratch?
So Shinkansen actually has wheels, eh?
Yeah, it does. There's a maglev.
China, is there a maglev?
Yeah, it goes. I think it goes from the airport to Beijing.
Right.
And there is a maglev in Japan as well, the one that's broken the record.
I honestly don't totally understand the point of, number one, having the tube. I get that it's so you can go faster, but it seems to make it crazy.
Less
it makes it weird. But it makes it weird to put it in a tube.
It does.
Right? Like, if it was a tunnel, so you weren't wasting surface area. Like, if Elon Musk had come up with a really clever boring machine that meant you could dig, you know, a deep tunnel quite cheap. And so it was just like, well, you know, it doesn't waste any... There's no surface footprint. It's like
there's a few things
400 meters down and away it goes.
If you suspend a tunnel, you know, on girders or whatever, along the thing, it's easier to level it. Like, when you look at, if you've ridden on a bullet train, any sort of bullet train, the thing that amazes me is when you look at the track next to you as you're speeding along at 400 k's an hour, and it's just, it doesn't move. It
doesn't move
it's
at
rock
all.
Solid. And so they've built this incredibly flat surface. And I can imagine that getting the Hyperloop train flat is all you're doing is adjusting, you know, some bolts or some dampers on every single pylon to get it flat, apart from where you have to drill it through a hill. So yeah, I get that. And
that is one of the ways that it gets a lot cheaper, because the bullet train is unbelievably expensive.
Yeah, because you can you're just putting concrete pylons in the ground.
That's,
you know, you can do those pretty easy. But then, you know, and I can understand removing the air out. Like, I kind of understand the whole thing, but then, like, as a company who's going to build a Hyperloop, why don't you just go to someone who's done maglev and done propulsion and done, like, all that stuff and say, hey, come and join us and help us out. And then you can ignore that whole, like, first year of development.
Yeah. They've probably still got the tooling.
Exactly. You just ignore it and say, well, let's use this platform and we can maglev it and put it in a tunnel.
They even decided to reinvent carbon fiber and called it, like, vibranium or something. No, they called it... What do they call it? Adamantium? No, did they? No, they called it unobtainium. It's just carbon fiber.
Yeah, I love Elon Musk, and he's doing amazing things, but it's really American exceptionalism, you know, to a T, that they think that they have to build everything from scratch for a Hyperloop.
If you want to know how to do really fast rail,
yeah,
just talk to the Japanese.
Exactly.
That's it. But of course, they already have got like a conventional bullet train going in California, right?
Is it? I think it's
unbelievably expensive.
Oh,
it's like $160 billion or something stupid.
That's absolutely nuts.
And Elon Musk or someone estimated that his tube would be like,
what's 30 billion? Was it 3 billion?
3 billion? Some ridiculously tiny amount by comparison. So
if you multiply it by 10, it's still apparently cheaper.
It's still heaps cheaper.
But would you ride in it? Would you like?
Yes. You know? Yeah. Oh, not. I wouldn't be the first. I wouldn't be the first.
Exactly.
But for sure I would. Yeah.
But again, the point of it, you know, tilting over around corners and all that. I mean, I suppose you wouldn't notice because you're inside the tunnel, so you couldn't feel it tilting. You just feel a pressure. But even so, I don't know. It just seems. Seems too nutty.
But still, we should do it. Like, if it costs $3 billion and we've got $3 billion, like every year, if we don't do stupid things like tax cuts, then we'll have $3 billion every year to spend, and we can just get Hyperloop.
Yeah, every year a new one.
Every year we can get a Hyperloop.
Yeah, just keep adding that.
Like 150 kilometers of Hyperloop or something. Like year one, we do Whangarei Auckland and Auckland Hamilton, and year two, we do Hamilton Tauranga and Hamilton Taupo and Hamilton Raglan.
So what you're saying is this is a key platform for Vote Avery.
Well,
Hyperloops every year.
Yeah, Vote Avery, President of New Zealand. Vote Avery, King of Waitemata.
There's no better option, to be honest. Out of all the options, now that Len's going,
You know what? I think Len should put his hat back in the ring.
He probably
did it for the cat among the pigeons. Oh. I don't think he'd be the least popular candidate.
No.
He might just fuck off up. And then it'd be like, oh my God, is it going to be Polino or Crone ruining the city? It's going to be basically the same job done, right?
I mean, I have a lot of time for Vic Crone as a person. She's lovely.
Yeah.
But this shtick about being a private company person means you're going to do a better job at government.
Yeah, it's false.
It's a false shtick.
It's false.
Yeah.
And also that she isn't going to do council first and then mayor once she understands how it works because she's such a strong leader. And that is like, that's literally a quote from her mouth, right?
Mm.
Pretty crazy. It's a mess. So the Vote Everything was basically going to be an art project campaign for Auckland Mayor. But then everyone decided to have their own farce. And I was like, I don't want to run for mayor anymore. It's not fun. And so now I'm deciding if I want to run for just the Waitemata local board.
Oh, yeah. Good idea.
I think that's probably what I'll do. Or if I want to, and I can do two at once. Because, because
health board as well, or you mean? Or the...
No, council. Council. Oh, right. Yeah. Against Mike Lee and Bill Ralston. and no one else who's running for it matters because who cares? So now originally I was thinking about doing that because Mike Lee had given some indications that he might not be seeking re-election, and I was pretty happy with him. Like when he was the Auckland
ARC, regional,
he was Auckland Regional Council chair, and he was probably the guy responsible for getting that regional fuel tax in. And he seems to have done a lot of really smart stuff with transport, and I really liked what he had to say about trams.
Don't put them in.
It's unbelievable that they got ripped out. Here's some theories why I think that they got ripped out, and it's crazy, and we need to put them back.
As long as you put them back properly and not the rubbish vineyard loop.
No, that's absolutely right. Yeah, it has to be modern light rapid transit.
Yeah,
and the reason for that, and people are like, but a tram is the same as a bus, but a bus is is more flexible. It's not the same. Tram throughput is unbelievably much higher than buses, and both are unbelievably much higher.
As long as you can run them down in the middle of State Highway 16 as well, because
you need to be able to give them a dedicated space.
It's just, I find that so depressing at the moment, driving into the city along State Highway 16, and because it's almost finished now, all the widening, what you do is you drive along quite happily, three lanes of traffic, a little bit busy, but fine. And beside you is this giant expanse of tar seal that is not being used because they're going to eventually move four lanes of traffic onto it.
Yeah.
And it just makes me so depressed when you say you could take that expanse of tar seal or even a tiny percentage of it and do what they do in Japan and put a train across the top of it on concrete pillars or a tram down the middle of it, and the traffic would be fine. It would still go.
Yeah.
And you'd have, you know, hundreds of people per meter instead of three.
Yeah, it's extraordinary, isn't it?
It does my head in.
Yeah. But at least they've got the cycleway, you know, because
now
on a bad day, you probably don't see a hell of a lot of people riding.
Mm. Oh, there's still a few. Still some hardy individuals.
Yeah. But on a good day, you know, you think about every one of those cyclists. Yeah. Every one of those people on a bicycle. they are all a car off the road. Yeah,
absolutely.
Taking
it's pretty interesting
so little space.
Yeah, you get quite big groups and jams around the traffic lights around St. Luke's and stuff. There's a lot of traffic on it.
That's such a good problem to have, eh?
It's great.
And of course, once you have that problem, someone has to come up with a solution. But Jesus, that bit through St. Luke's, oh my God, there's so many lanes now.
It is
so offensive. And I guess it was thanks partly to your sister and a bunch of other people getting organized that all those trees weren't cut to the... They weren't raised to the ground. I mean, it's that whole bit through there is so inhuman.
It's really huge. It's foul.
Absolutely foul. And the
Teatatu interchange now as well. They've finished the Teatatu interchange. Yeah. They've added lanes and, you know, crossings. And now so the kids have to cross like five fucking crossings to get to school.
Yeah.
You know, from the other side of Teatatu instead of two, because it's just like the cars have to have priority.
Yeah.
So the kids have to take... you know, press the buzzer four times or something to get across all the different little islands.
It wasn't always like that, Ben.
No.
It wasn't always like that. Auckland was a public transport city. The idea that Aucklanders have always been in love with cars is absolutely false. Like, there have been drivers. There have been cars and roads. And there actually was even, you know, traffic problems from quite a long time ago as well. And the solution to the traffic problems was always build more roads. And guess what? The traffic problems just kept getting worse. And part of the solution was, oh, well, let's rip up the tram tracks. Well, guess what? That made the problem worse.
Yeah.
And the real solution is more people in trains and more people in trams and more people on bicycles for sure.
Yeah.
And so vote Avery, for fuck's sake, because it's our only hope of having a future. Vote Avery, King of Waitemata.
Sounds good to me.
Vote Avery, motherfucking Emperor of Auckland.
Oh, but you'll just bring in driverless cars, won't you? That's the way of the future.
Listen, I am I'm on record as being really excited about the prospects of driverless cars, probably like 50 years from now.
Good fun.
But driverless cars in the next 20 years are going to be no part of the solution to our problem. No part of the solution to our problem. Driverless cars are going to be what?
If you replaced all cars with driverless cars tomorrow,
you'd have double the traffic.
Yes, exactly.
Because they'd all drive you to work and then drive home again. So instead of being driven to work and then stored somewhere all day, they'd be reusing the road. So you've just increased your morning road usage by 100%,
and then
in the afternoon they'll come and get you again and drop you home. But you should have been on a train or a bicycle both ways.
Exactly. I mean, this is the thing. There'll be much, much higher utilization of the cars, but everyone is still going to want to go home at the same time.
Yeah.
And so you'll still need just as many cars.
Yeah. And you know what the best way is to move a lot of people all at once? In one vehicle, it's called a train.
Or a bus.
Look, a bus if you have to. Look, buses have absolutely saved the Northern Motorway to the bridge.
Yes.
Right? The busway over there is absolutely an unmitigated success.
Yep.
There is no two ways about it. The only way it could be better would be if there was a dedicated lane for it across the bridge, and if it ran on rails and was a train.
And if the bridge was beautiful. It's not a beautiful bridge.
And of course, the solution to the problem we've got with our bridge now is what's the transport people called these days?
Oh, is it the NZTA or
NZ? Is it? They might be called NZTA now. They keep changing their bloody name.
Yeah.
Probably it's only like once every 5 years, but that's still a problem for me. I like things to have a consistent name. Ministry of Works, for fuck's sake. Ministry of Roads, I don't even know what they were called. But well, they basically are still the Ministry of Roads, right? Like they're called like New Zealand Transport Authority or whatever. But it's not just about transport. It's about fucking roads. So they're like, okay, yeah, we're going to do another harbour crossing. We're going to do a tunnel. And we're going to do it for $7 billion. And it's going to be like passenger cars only. Because that's what we need. That's what we need more of in Auckland City. We need more fucking cars. Because one thing that everyone here, everyone listening who's from Auckland will be, and everyone who's not from Auckland, I'm sorry you have to hear this. I know you've got your own problems to deal with, and most of them are
traffic related.
They're much more pleasant than dealing with fucking traffic. The problem that we've got with the current amount of cars is that there's no fucking car parks for them. So what are we going to do with more lanes of cars coming into the city? We can't bring more cars in. We can't stack them up any higher than we already are. We've got no room for more cars. So put a fucking rail crossing in.
On a cheap, good-looking bridge, you know? If you want fast trains, go to Japan. If you want good, cheap bridges, go to Europe.
Right.
They'll build you a bridge for probably, what, a couple of billion dollars? It'll look good. It'll have trains and footpaths on it.
You're right. Yeah, absolutely right. And that's the other thing. Like, it's like the idea of having a tunnel under the harbour is pretty exciting, right? Like there were always rumours that there were like lava tunnels and stuff that maybe were flooded now, but once upon a time it was possible to make it through and, you know, all that kind of story. You might not remember that. I remember that kind of thing.
I do. Yeah.
And like the idea of being able to get from, you know, over here to over there through a tunnel, it's cool. But you're right. It should be a bridge because with a bridge you can have pedestrians and bicycles.
Exactly.
Right. And the tunnel, you can't have those things because tunnels with vehicles in them are really dangerous places.
Because you'll get a munter with a digger on the back of a truck.
Yeah.
And it'll drive in the tunnel and it'll fall off. And then, you know, that's an actual genuine hazard.
Yeah.
Of people dying of asphyxiation or fire or death.
Yeah. Fires and car tunnels are just terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're right. It should be another bridge and it can be such a beautiful bridge. I suggest that we should make a rainbow bridge that is just beautifully colorful. Like just like you remember, you remember when the Sky Tower was going up and it was like, oh,
solid concrete,
fucking concrete. Why haven't they put some nice coating on it? Something shiny or whatever. And then the first time they lit it up.
Yeah.
Do you remember how, and like they, maybe not the first time they lit it up, but like when they first introduced it, the colors weren't quite as good. But then later on, they introduced a better thing where they could gradually shift and change the colors and stuff. And it was like, holy shit, this thing looks amazing. This is great. How about a bridge like that?
Be great.
And that you can walk across.
Yeah. Walk across, right across, brilliant.
And take a tram or a train across, and that train could then go up the busway, and the bus would not run on it anymore. It would become a bit of rail, and we'd continue it much further than it currently goes, certainly past Albany, past Orewa, maybe Waiwera, maybe Whangarei. Hey, let's go all the way. I mean, why can't you take a passenger train to Kaitaia? There's a rail up there. You just can't take a passenger train.
Why is this hard? Like, is it because, like, is it things like the Northcote residents, the Northcote Single Resident Association, right, they complain about, you know, visual pollution of bridges, but it doesn't seem hard. It seems like, why would you spend three or four times the amount for less utility and more difficulty building it? Because, you know, they'll pull a Seattle and they'll get halfway under and then the bloody boring machine will get stuck and I have to then somehow dig it out with another machine and it puzzles me why it has to be this hard.
So maybe we need that national policy statement.
Right.
That's just like, listen.
We just need to, Someone needs to sneak in there and write some stuff in it, like and a bridge.
Now there are a lot of people, generally I think they appear to be right-wingers, who are like, the RMA is bullshit and that's why everything got expensive and we should get rid of it.
Mm.
And I am kind of sympathetic to that view. Another one of my unsighted facts.
You don't need to. It's like, I don't know if you've been watching Silicon Valley, but you know they had that Rigby scene.
Yes, I have.
Rigby, Richard, you know, you don't need to prefix.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Discourse facts with "I'm sorry about this being unsighted," or uninformed. You don't need to say that anymore. You can just say your facts.
Okay. So on a New Zealand TV current affairs or documentary program, about a year ago, I think they were talking about dirty water, and they were talking about the RMA, and someone mentioned a maybe fact about the RMA approval rate, and it's something like 98% of RMA requests are approved.
It's only nut jobs that are declined, effectively.
So what the fuck is the point? If all of them, practically all of them, are approved, then why don't we have better rules that say, if you're one of these things, which is going to be approved, then don't do this expensive process? Like, you must be able, maybe it's a big data problem, but I doubt it. I bet there's probably only several thousand of these things in existence, right?
On the other hand, though,
figure out what the ones are that are a problem and just make the law more specific about those.
Is the RMA the thing that saved the Pohutukawa 6? Or was that just a normal kind of council notification, we're going to be doing this thing?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Wow, yeah. What, anything else big happen while we were away?
Did SpaceX even really? I mean, it existed, but was SpaceX like amazing in 2014? It probably already was amazing, eh?
I don't think they were. Their cadence of launches was up there. They're just flinging one up every couple of weeks now.
I guess in 2014 they'd probably already done that what do they call it, like the cricket or something? That one that just flew up and then like traversed and then landed.
Yeah, but they weren't regularly landing them.
Yeah, and that wasn't their Falcon thing. That was like a little tiny rocket, right?
Yeah. And I love the way they've got to the stage now where they're saying, we're probably not going to land this one because it's coming in really hot. It's a, you know, geosynchronous orbit thing. But they landed anyway.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's incredible. Absolutely unbelievable. So since we last spoke, we've discovered that New Zealand's a tax haven.
Oh, yeah. It's not, though, apparently.
John Key reckons it's not. Like everyone else reckons it is. everyone else is yes, and he's like, my lawyer who takes advantage of the fact that we're a tax haven reckons we're not.
You know that John Key's reckons are much stronger than other people's reckons. So
John Key's reckons are less well cited than ours.
They're the best, most powerful reckons. Your reckons is not anywhere near as powerful as John Key's.
I need to take a note out of his playbook for my what I will call my campaign, which is going to involve a couple of Twitter hashtags and a wasted registration fee.
Avery reckons.
Another thing that happened medical marijuana's got really big this year, and that was a thing that we talked about a little bit, not really medical, but kind of legalization.
Yeah, that's another one that doesn't seem hard. It just doesn't seem hard.
It seems obvious.
You look at Colorado.
Yeah. And they didn't just do medical, in New Zealand. So technically in New Zealand, medical marijuana is legal.
Yeah, with the right.
But it's got to have like producers, approved producers and producers details. And it's not like leaf or bud or whatever, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But like you say, Colorado, it's the model now, isn't it? So you have, and this is the thing that people are afraid of. The thing that people are afraid of is like, well, if you make marijuana legal, then all those gangs are just going to get really rich off selling it to them. But the Colorado model is that you have a regulated industry. Like the whole vertical is all regulated. So the sales are regulated.
Yeah.
And the supply.
You have to give your name when you get certain things over the counter at chemists. It's the same thing, right? You got to give your name when you buy your dope.
Right. Yeah. And the chemist doesn't buy what kind of pills do you get from the chemist? The chemist doesn't get the Codrol, the Codrol Max. They don't get that from the Black Power, right? They get that from a licensed pharmaceutical factory, right? They get it from like Bayer or whoever. And the Colorado model is not just that anyone can now sell marijuana. It's that licensed suppliers can grow marijuana.
Dispensaries,
And so it's not just about the sales, it's about the supply as well. And so you get people who are like, well, my big problem is that I don't want kids to be able to get it. And it's like, well, listen, dickhead.
You're less likely to get it.
The kids are getting it. The kids are getting it now. They can get it. I could get it as a kid. The kids now for sure can get it. The only place you can get it from right now is from criminals. And the idea is that you just take the criminals out of it. Right? It'll be harder for the kids to get it.
It doesn't seem hard.
It seems really straightforward. But just talking about this makes me feel, because, you know, for a long time, the only people who were really talking about this were kind of Fruit Loop druggies.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like all of the normal people, they'd come on TV and like their tie would be wrong and like their suit would be like wrong.
It was a hemp suit or whatever it was.
Right. Yeah. And it would just like everything about them would be like a little bit off kilter. And it was like, you're not going to convince anyone with this story. But then you get someone who is literally dying.
Yeah.
And she says,
in pain,
you know what? Marijuana would help me. And this is not an academic thought that I've had. I am using marijuana currently. I'm using it illegally and it is helping. And like, this is people who like they have legal medical heroin that they can get, right? Legal medical speed that they can get. They have legal medical opium that they can get. They have legal medical every kind
of
drug, and they can get it. And you know the one thing they can't get? It's the one that we've all tried, and we know it's not as serious as the ones that they can legally get. They can't have that one.
That's, I haven't thought of it that way. It's absolutely insane, the fact that you can. Yeah, you're right. It's easier to get opium. You can buy codeine over the counter.
Right. You can get stuff which is, like, you can get stuff which is hard drugs legally from your family doctor, right? And if you have cancer, you can get, they'll give you everything that you ask for, right? Because, of course, because what's the consequence? Like, what's the issue that's going to happen? The only thing that's going to happen is that your life is going to be a little bit easier to live for the limited duration of it, right?
Yeah.
And we tell those people that they can't have weed? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding? What are you talking about? Like, if I break my arm, they'll give me heroin. Or opium, whatever, you know.
Yeah,
I'm also not a pharmacist, you know. Newsflash.
That's nuts. Totally.
All right, so we've solved that one, Ben.
It's also easy.
Yeah.
Put that in the MPS as well, the secret at the bottom of it. Yeah.
The last thing,
and marijuana.
Yeah. The last thing is bicycling in Auckland.
Yeah, it's great. I think it
has gotten massively bigger in the last year or two.
Traffic-wise on the cycleway, it absolutely has. Yeah.
A hell of a lot of that is protected cycle lanes.
Yep.
Because, listen, we are on the same team broadly with cycling, but then as far as like the within cycling schism, like the number one schism,
I was going to say,
is pro and anti helmets.
I think.
Right? And I am pro helmets because I have never really ridden in cycle lanes. I've only ridden in the fucking chaotic death trap of city streets where I was knocked off several times into traffic.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I'm pro not having head injuries.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm pro children wearing helmets because they're less coordinated than adults.
Yeah.
But when I look at the thing for me is when I look at pictures of, you know, Amsterdam or other places where there is mass cycling, I just simply can't imagine that happening with compulsory helmets because there's just too much of a range of people doing a range of things and just like the times, you know, sometimes, you know, just wanting to pop down to the dairy to grab something and then, you know, it seems so trivial. And I know that you'll say, oh, you know, it's easy to put a helmet on, you just clip it closed and stuff. But the change in attitude of being able to just jump on your bike in your jandals in summer on your shorts and just cruise up to the dairy and get a bottle of milk and come back again. It's like, you know, imagine if you had to strap a helmet on when you went for a walk or when you went for a drive. It just changes your attitude to it.
Well, see, so to begin with, I wasn't a driver. I was a motorcyclist.
Yeah.
So my first, like, three or four vehicles, like, my first thing was a little 50cc Indian-made scooter, a Bajaj.
Oh, yeah.
A Bajaj Sunny 50cc. It was a total piece of shit. Had to wear a helmet. Second bike was a Suzuki GSX R250. Amazing bike. Super light, super noisy. It was a hell of a lot of trouble. Redline was, like, something stupid. Like
17,000.
Yeah, some crazy
those things are
high RPM.
Yeah.
My third vehicle was a Honda Honda VFR 700.
Yep.
Amazing bike, beautifully smooth, unbelievably fast, considering it looked like a piece of shit. So, like, my first three vehicles were, and at the same time as, like, and immediately before the scooter, I was riding to work on a bicycle. And before that, I'd been riding to high school and intermediate on a bicycle, right? And I'd always worn a helmet. And then when I got a motorcycle, I was like, well, I mean, of course I'm wearing a helmet. It's the law. I'm just going to continue doing this. Mm. So, like,
So, like, there's no part of you that remembers or, you know, thinks about riding without a helmet. Yeah.
No part of me. And I think that's why I also feel like people are a bit odd when they ride a bicycle without putting on gloves.
Yeah. Yeah, because, when you see those people riding motorbikes without gloves and, you know.
It's crazy. Just, it's so crazy. Yeah. So, you know, I know that the stats are actually on your side as far as adult helmet usage.
Yeah.
But I also think that you're a role model for your kids. And so I think it's important that we, as potential role models for little people who actually do probably need to wear helmets, because, like you say, they don't have the coordination. They do actually have a much higher proportion of head injuries and accidents than adults do. Like, we need to wear helmets so that they will wear helmets. That's what I think. No, and I know we're not going to agree with this because we've spoken about this many times. And look, I respect your view. I will pay my tiny part of your hospital bills if you have an accident while not wearing a helmet. And I'll be really sorry when you're like, when, like, Ali has to spend her entire days feeding you some sort of slop through a straw. I'll be really sorry.
I wear a helmet all the time, especially when commuting.
Like, yeah, sometimes it's not clipped up though, Ben.
Occasionally.
You've got photographic evidence of that. You did that right in front of police officers. In a parade with your daughter, I think, on the back of the bike.
Riding at like 3 kilometres an hour.
And your helmet not done up. I thought that was specifically aimed at me. I'm pretty sure it was.
Civil disobedience.
Listen, and hey, look, one thing. You look heaps cooler on a bike. Not you. You never look cool. But like cool people look heaps cooler on a bike without a helmet.
Yeah,
it's true. But like, if you don't ride a bike because you don't look cool in a helmet, get over it. Well, take the bus, okay? But get over it. Because everyone's in the same boat.
Yeah, I think there could be a halfway point where potentially, you know, grown ups in a protected cycle lane can take their helmet off and clip it on the handlebars for a bit. That could be nice, but we'll see how we go.
Like, at the moment, it just seems like it's unenforced, and maybe that is the midway point.
Yeah, that's true. At least we're not where Australia is, which is fucking bicycle licenses and
It's insane. It's stupid.
Totally nuts.
So really, the thing I want to talk about was not just like the increase in cycling use, but the increase in electric bikes.
It's so neat
because, like one misgiving I've always had about cycling in Auckland is that, you know, we're a volcano field. We are like the most disrupted bit of dirt in the country, probably just about. You know, wherever you go, you're going to be up and down some hills. If you're lucky, you'll find a ridgeline you can follow for a while.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't, you know, compared to Christchurch, like if there's a lot of cities that are built in like floodplains and they're lovely and flat. And Auckland is not flat.
Yeah.
Right?
That's handy.
But electric bikes just flatten it. They just flatten it out.
They do. Absolutely. It's handy having an extra boost when you need it. It's really great. Yeah. You know, there's cities that are, the cities that are as hilly as Auckland, like Seattle's hilly as fuck, and they have a lot more cyclists. But, you know, I think electric bikes are a good way to get people moving around.
Yeah.
Definitely. They're like, because the bicycle is, I think the bicycle is the most efficient form of transport in terms of energy input versus distance covered.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And an electric bike, you know, reduces that efficiency a little bit, but, well, maybe it doesn't. I'm not sure what the balance is, but I did the maths, and it cost me something like 3 cents of electricity to charge my bike for the trip to work.
Right.
It's great.
Yeah. The thing I'm actually it's sort of stupid. I'd feel really self-conscious. The thing I'm most interested in right now is like a boosted board style of thing.
Oh, yeah, like a Z board or whatever it is. Yeah.
Because, geez, there's something so appealing about them.
Fun. They're like magic carpets. Like anything, you know, that's the electric bike feels like that, but I can imagine a board would feel even nicer.
And Loophole, I think it's a heck of a lot more dangerous than a bicycle, but I don't think you need to wear a helmet.
This is true.
Crazy. That's pretty stupid.
Ah, fun.
So if we do get an MPS, are you suggesting a national policy statement?
Mm.
If we are treated like Canterbury, are you suggesting that we're going to get a container mall in a central city stadium?
I hope so. I mean, isn't that what you get when you get, you know, you get commissioners? You get, like, you know, Jerry Brownlee's stadium, and yeah, it's quite neat.
I should talk about some of my policies.
Is a central city stadium one of them, or is it like
stadiums
in every suburb?
No stadium. Stadiums are white elephants, really, aren't they?
Does anyone watch rugby anymore? Anyway, really?
Look, I don't. I sort of watch it. I don't really care about it, and I don't really care about where it's played. And like putting it in some of the most expensive real estate in all of New Zealand, that seems pretty unnecessary.
What's your policy on parking? Do you have a policy on parking?
I think that people should be able to park near their home.
Yeah.
Wherever that is. But if you're in the city, I don't think you should expect to be able to find a car park.
That's true. I agree.
So like for a long time, if you were building something, you'd have to build like a certain number of car parks to go with it. I think you need to forget about that.
Yeah, I think they've taken that away, or they're much more loose on it now.
Yeah. I think that as long as we provide the alternative means of getting around, fuck parking.
Yeah.
Like, fuck it. It's a waste of space. Like, we dedicate so much room to cars in the city, and like, cars are a really great way of getting around in some kinds of journeys. Like if you are... If you're a group of six disabled people and one able-bodied person,
a
van is the best way to get around.
Yeah, the funny thing is, there was a thing posted today just about Auckland Transport's plan on parking, and the one thing they look like they're going to do is demand-based pricing.
Yeah.
So they'll be setting the pricing to ensure that if you need it, you can find a park, but that park might be fucking expensive. You know, and I think it's an interesting way to do it. So that, you know, it's kind of a bit the Uber approach, isn't it? That says parks get more and more expensive the fuller they get.
Yeah. Everywhere that we have dedicated, every bit of ground that we've dedicated to cars is shit. Like all our motorways are shit, and all our car only streets are shit.
Mm.
And so everything that we can do to reduce the number of cars, I think, is better. Cars absolutely ruin cities. Because cities are not for cars, cities are for people.
Yep.
And people need to be able to, like, if you want to get from shop A to shop B, or cafe A to bar B, or workplace 1 to food court 2, you almost always have to cross a road full of things that will absolutely kill you. Unless you wait your turn, even if it's you and like 80 people waiting your turn.
Yeah.
And I think it's absolutely the wrong way around. I don't really have a policy on parks. I have policies on how streets should be used. I think, and now I'm speaking and thinking really only about Waitemata. So it's not like it is for you out in Te Aritu. Right. I'm thinking about Ponsonby and Parnell and Westmere. You know, I'm thinking about Arch Hill, and I'm not thinking about, you know, further out in different suburbia or different city centres. So what I'm thinking about, so side streets should have a maximum speed limit of maybe 30 kilometers an hour.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And sure. And we should have we should copy a little known idea from England called play streets.
Mm.
And these are streets where the residents request this designation. And so you'd only have it in places where there are a bunch of families with kids.
Yeah.
And if you get play street designation, I think that their rule is it's something like between 8 a.m. and sundown, you cannot go onto that street as a car unless your destination is on that street.
Cool.
So you can't be through traffic because the expectation is that there are going to be children playing on that street.
It's a cool idea.
It's a great idea, and it's not. And it's not about dropping it from space on them. It's about residents requesting it.
Yeah. I think you could. You almost say that it's probably like I say. I'm not a town planner or anything, but you should be able to get in and out of suburbs.
Yeah.
Via car, you know, like get onto the motorway and get away. Like you're going to go, you know, travel somewhere a further distance, but getting around a suburb, you shouldn't need to get around a suburb by car.
No.
Should be walking or biking.
Yeah. So like if right now I think the speed limit on Ponsonby Road, is it 30 or is it 40? I actually can't remember. Is it 40?
Yeah.
So the speed limit on Ponsonby Road is 40.
And it's six lanes of traffic. And six lanes of cars, four lanes of traffic and two lanes of parking.
And the speed limit on Summer Street is 50. So you can pull off these four lanes of traffic onto like 0.8 lanes of side street and accelerate. You can accelerate onto Summer Street. What the hell?
Nuts.
So, like, so whatever the speed limit is on Ponsonby Road or on like kind of ridge lines or, you know, there's spaces like you have to be able to move cars around, right? Because there are and vans and buses and all those things. There is actually a need for bits of tarmac that you can drive on, right?
Hmm.
But the speed limit up there should be probably 30. And if the speed limit on kind of the ridge lines or the kind of the car bits is going to be that, then I think the side streets should be lower. So Summer Street should be 20. And listen, honestly, if you've driven on Summer Street, you probably don't want to go even 20.
No.
Like people to park their cars on the footpaths on both sides, right? Just so that you get one lane of traffic.
Yeah. But you were saying, like, oh, it's different for Te Aroha. That's the same. Te Aroha, you know.
Oh, I'm sure. I just don't really know.
Well, what I mean is anything that's not the main roads around the place, it should be 30 Ks. You know, there's like four arterial roads that go through the suburb. They can be 50. Everything else can be 30. So, it should be the same. What's your policy on Queen Street? You close it?
So, you know, those shared spaces are beautiful.
Yeah.
By comparison. Mm. And when Queen Street has been closed and has been pedestrian space, it was alive.
Mm, that's great. It's a bit like after.
So we don't actually have to. Sort of thing, don't actually have to guess. You know, we've seen what it's like with no cars on there. Now, should there be no transport through there? Now, this is really what I paused about. I think that ultimately we're probably going to have trams going up Queen Street, and they will need to have space. I think we'll probably have cars going across.
The Bourke Street in Melbourne where they've, you know, the main shopping precinct of it, they've shut down, but there's still trams going through and it's fine, you know, it's pedestrians and trams and then
so bicycles and there's so one of the things I remember about the few tram lines that I remember that still existed when I was a kid in the 1980s, which is amazing that they were still there. I think on Key Street was that people were worried about bicycles getting their tyres caught in them.
Getting caught and flipping over,
I found this amazing, let me see if I can find a link to it for you, because being able to see a visual demonstration of how this works, let me see. It's basically it's a springy rubber insert that runs along the side of the track, and the tram
just depresses it.
But like a bicycle won't depress it. So for a bicycle,
brilliant.
There's nothing to get stuck in.
No,
it's really simple.
Because trams are fucking heavy compared to bicycles. So
yeah, absolutely. Can I find the?
This is great radio.
Yeah, you're right. Actually, I could probably do this later. Yeah, absolutely right.
I think we've covered everything in the short gap since we last talked.
probably just about. children art and parks and joy are my main, and the port, those are all my policies.
You raised a child since we last talked as well.
That's right. He's going to be two in a month.
They're pretty cool when they get to talky age, eh?
It's amazing. He talks around us, but he's very quiet around other people.
Okay.
So I don't know if it's because I talk too much and don't give him an opportunity. I mean, that sounds hard to believe, eh?
Like, I can't possibly.
You'd never guess that about me.
That wouldn't know. That's not this. That
so you know the Domain. It's got the museum in it.
The Auckland Domain, yeah.
It's got those playing grounds, and it's got a duck pond, and it's got winter gardens, and it's got the band rotunda.
Hills to run up and down, and
You know there's no playground?
That's really?
There's no playground.
That's crazy. They're going to the whole front lawn of the
museum. No, it's not going to happen.
I saw a great picture of it, the big memorial lawn.
Yeah, nothing is going to happen. Nothing should happen.
Oh.
Yeah, they cocked it up. I think Mike Lee has put the, believe it or not, I think Mike Lee's put the kibosh on that.
Oh, it looked good.
No, you should have nothing there. But in the actual park itself, there should be a playground. That's one of my it's one of my many policies. You can have a playground, like where you can provide like pleasant experiences for families, that will make a space more pleasant probably for everyone.
Do you put one, where would you put it? Beside the winter garden?
I mean, it's a huge park. Probably you could have three.
Yeah. And the band rotunda. It's crazy that I have one.
Over near the hospital, maybe, because, you know, there's lots of kids in there. And some of them are pretty miserable and probably could do with a little bit of time out of the confines of the hospital grounds. There's no playground in the Domain. Absolutely insane. Also, did you know that there's a Japanese garden in the Domain?
No.
It's a complete fucking wreck, and it's an absolute embarrassment because it's like part of a sister city partnership with Kyoto or someone.
Where
and
is it? Down by the sculpture garden or something?
It's down the bottom next to the bowling green.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And it's an embarrassment. And so we've got to fix that. That's one of my many policies. Listen, this is Waitemata, okay? This is local. This is not Te Atatu's problems. This is our problems. No playground in the Domain. But everyone from Auckland comes to the Domain. So you should all vote for me somehow. You should all claim to live in the central city. Just make up an apartment and put yourself on the electoral for that.
Sounds good.
I would never suggest that. Also, I've totally got a solution to the port.
Oh, what are you going to do?
You've heard of the High Line.
In New York, yes.
Yeah. So they repurposed, you know what it is, but I'll explain for the few people who don't know about it. So there was an elevated rail line, and the rail line no longer needed to operate. And so they turned it into an elevated park. Like the line is gone, and they turned it into like a walkway with like green stuff growing there and
fountains and things
park benches and all that nice stuff. Basically, we'll build our own High Line along the edge of the port, and kind of overlapping the port where they can agree that they're not going to use that space for stacks, and we'll run it. Like, it's going to be a huge lot, like a really long and narrow park with routes to get down to get to like various bars and cafes and stuff along there.
On the inside of the port?
On the land side.
You won't see anything past the fucking stacks of containers.
For some of it, there are stacks of containers, but not for all of it.
Ah.
And at the end of it, it turns you connected up with a massive, like a sort of a massive barge where you have, it'd sort of be like Wynyard Quarter.
Right.
You know, where they've got a few bars and stuff and a playground and maybe a bit of sort of beach, fake beach.
Past Mechanics Bay there, yeah.
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 Now, it would have to work in conjunction somehow with, like, the lifeguard, the Coast Guard base there, and also there's a heliport there.
Yep.
But, look, they wanted to expand themselves out into our harbour, and we were like, no, how about we take a bit of our harbour and make ourselves, like, because none of that coastline, like, if you go into Judges Bay as a beach, it sucks because there's no water turnover in there.
Yeah, it's stagnant.
And so we make our own kind of beach, swimming, recreational swimming, like pleasant space, just out from Judges Bay.
Sounds great.
Sounds expensive.
Nah. You could run the Hyperloop underneath it.
Yeah, why not? We could have a Hyperloop that just goes from Brutamart.
To Judges Bay.
Yeah. Accelerates and decelerates just in the blink of an eye. It's like being, it's like being shot from a gun and then caught in a catcher's mitt. It's like, whoop, poof, and your eyes go red just like yours already are. And you're like, maybe your vision goes like cloudy for a little while. If you've got a, if you had any kind of weakness of your retina, it's definitely detached already.
You're at the beach faster than anyone else.
Yep. Our own high line.
Yeah.
Yep.
Brilliant.
Because listen, that port is not going anywhere. It's not going anywhere. So we just have to work around it. Right, and if you and the space along and along the edge of it, the road edge of it, sucks. It's horrible there. There's so many cars going through there.
It does. So you'd
so we just lift pedestrians and bicycles up off the road area. We give them a nice wide platform with some green stuff, and we just let them have their own long thin park.
You'd get to the ferry building, and you'd be up in the High Line, and then back down again.
Exactly.
Perfect.
Yeah.
That'd work.
Fuck, it might. I don't know. I'm not an engineer. I'm not an architect. It's just an idea, okay? It's just a sketch of an idea. I'm just really, really, my policy is that it's going to be there, and so we have to figure out a way of working around it and having a city that we can enjoy.
Yeah.
Right? And we are creative.
I wish it could go away, though.
It's not going anywhere. I just don't think it's going anywhere, eh? So, look, me too. But what would go there in its place?
I don't know, Jerry Brownlee Stadium.
Maybe a stadium, maybe just some fucking buildings.
Yeah.
That are just, you know, and then there's another fence. And we still don't get to use it.
Hmm. Right. Is that us?
Oh, I have a policy on homelessness as well.
How does that work?
Give them houses.
Build more houses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Emergency housing for everyone. Anyway, that's not really a council thing. It's a, all right. Yeah, I guess that is us. Are we just gonna?
It's been good.
Are we just gonna just put it up?
I think so. I was just like, maybe next time we get angry again, we can do another one.
All right, like in 2018.
Yeah. Is it an election next year?
It's an election. It's an election this year. My election is this year, bro. When I'm gonna somehow beat the incredibly successful. I think he's never lost an election in about 20 years. Mike Lee up against someone with the name recognition of Bill Ralston.
If Dick Quacks can get in, you'll be fine.
Oh my God, George Wood, all those guys. How the heck? Those guys, like, I'm not saying that those particular people are stupid wastes of space and also incredibly expensive in a city full of, like, intelligent, creative people. Like, those are the guys that we've elected to represent us? That doesn't seem possible.
It's almost like, you know, winning a medal in running is not a qualification to be a politician.
Right. Hey, wow, that's a shocking idea.
Yeah. There is an election next year, I forgot, because we're going to get our $3 billion.
Hey, are we getting our tax cut? Are we going to get 20 bucks? Are we going to get 20 bucks each a week back?
Yeah. And
are
not,
you
you're not going to get KiwiSaver or whatever, you know?
I know that we were winding down, but that's like, are you really hanging out for that 20 bucks?
I'm so not.
Like no one who is going to benefit from that tax cut. No. And to me, it sounds like they're just going to shift the threshold for the top tax rate again.
Yeah, I'm hanging out for us to do some really amazingly awesome infrastructure projects, like getting us off coal fucking power stations and, you know, some genuinely interesting, productive things rather than giving everyone 20 bucks.
This is something we could talk about next time.
Yeah.
The opportunities that some of these new manufacturing technologies make available to New Zealand. Things I say 3D printing, it just, you think about those really tatty plastic bits of garbage. But you look at that electric bike that we spoke about, I think, I posted it on Twitter the other day. It was an electric motorcycle.
Yeah.
It's like got a top speed of 80 kilometers per hour. It's not very powerful. It's not actually very useful, but as a proof of concept for, like, what do they call it? Like laser sintering or something, where you take basically titanium or aluminium, some sort of alloy
dust.
Powder.
Yeah.
Yeah, dust. And you turn it using a laser into, you know, a beautifully designed, manufactured structure. That's the kind of manufacturing that we could do.
And the other thing, I don't know why I hadn't thought of it, but you know, I was vaguely looking into solar power for the house, and it makes no sense for a personal, residential home, especially when you're not home in the day.
Yeah.
But schools right. where
huge they, roofs.
Yeah, huge roofs, and they only use power.
Yeah.
When the sun's out.
Yeah.
Why are our schools not solar powered?
And panels are so cheap now.
Ah, they're so cheap and so much more efficient than they used to be.
Like, the expensive part still is batteries.
Yeah.
And just don't use batteries. Just grid tie of a bunch of panels, use as much as you can, and the bit you can't use, you pull it from the grid.
And at night, all you're running is your bloody alarm system and your security lights, and that's it, all that the school's running.
Yeah, absolutely right. And there'd almost certainly be a surplus.
Yeah, yeah.
So that produced power for the neighboring everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a good idea. Are you is that Vote Gracewood, is it?
Yeah, that's my policy platform.
Solar powered schools.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm gonna vote for you 15 or 20 times. What's your electorate? Peninsula?
Something like that. West.
Yeah, I will become 15 or 20 residents of
Perfect. Infill housing.
Your electorate. As long as you do the same for me.
I shall. Nothing wrong with rigging an election.
This was as amazing as this seems. Like, no one asked for a discourse.
No. It'll be a nice surprise present.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't ask for it, but here it is.
There you go. Have a nice one.
Fish and chips. Sorry,
this show is cancelled. Beep.